son, father, said Nobuhiko. You may depend on it. Nodding, Saito said, I know, my son. I was merely trying to be humorous. I was not cut out to be a comedian.
As long as we've gotten so damn serious, Dan said, there's something that you can check out for me, Nobo.
He told them about Zach Freiberg's calculations of the greenhouse cliff. That could be disastrous for Japan, Saito exclaimed once he understood what Dan was saying. Half our population lives on the seacoast. If sea levels rise abruptly, a catastrophe.
Dan grumbled to himself. Great going, guy. His last damned night on Earth, and you tell him that half his countrymen are going to be drowned or driven from their homes. Nice way to send off an old friend. Aloud, he said, It's only numbers in a computer, Sai. It might not mean anything at all in the real world. Turning to Nobuhiko, But I'd like to see if your scientists come up with the same numbers, given Zack's input. Nobo said, I will have the chief of our research section contact Dr. Freiberg first thing tomorrow.
Good. Saito pushed his chair back from the table and got to his feet. It is time, he said.
Wordlessly, Dan and Nobuhiko followed the elder Yamagata out into the courtyard. A bright, nearly full moon was scudding in and out of silvery clouds. Dan could make out pinpoints of light at Aristarchus and Copernicus. Alphonsus, almost dead in the center of the moon's lopsided face, was lost in the natural glare.
A beautiful night, Saito said as they approached a building Dan did not recognize. If I were a poet, I would write a haiku about this night.
They entered the new building. Inside it was like a hospital. Shadowless lighting from overhead panels. Dry, cool atmosphere. A faint antiseptic odor. Silence, except for the slightest whisper of air coming through the screened ducts up near the ceiling.
My mausoleum, Saito explained, as he pushed open another door.
A team of green-clad medics sprang to their feet and bowed deeply. In the middle of the room stood what looked to Dan like an operating table, with a cluster of big lamps above it and tables of surgical instruments to one side. Along the far wall rested a large metal canister, a door big enough to hold a man. A 21st century sarcophagus, Dan thought. Next to it stood a row of cylinders, liquid nitrogen for freezing Sai's body. A nurse helped Dan and Nobo into green surgical gowns and sterile masks, while the rest of the team stripped Saito naked and laid him on the table. Dan saw the chief doctor bend over his old friend and inject him in the left arm with a hypodermic syringe. Sai beckoned to Dan with his other hand.
These are my last moments, he said when Dan was beside him, at least for a while. Take care of my son, will you, old friend? I ask nothing more of you.
Dan gripped Saito's hand as if it were his only lifeline. I'll look after him as if he were my own son. Saito smiled weakly.
Good, good. Perhaps you can find him a suitable wife, too.
Despite himself, a grin broke across Dan's face. I'm probably not the best man in the world to give marriage advice.
Better than you think, Daniel. You have always been a much better man than you believe yourself to be.
Dan felt at a loss for words.
Please, send Nobo to me now.
Dan stepped away and gestured Nobuhiko to his father's side. The two spoke briefly in tones too low for Dan to make out. Then the son let go of his father's hand. It dropped to the sheeted tabletop lifelessly.
It is done, said the chief medic. I declare him clinically dead.
One of the assistants bowed deeply to Nobuhiko and presented a legal form attached to a clipboard for his signature. 9. Dan's dreams that night were filled not with memories of Saito, but with strange, shifting apparitions of Jane Scanwell and Lucita, his ex-wife, and other women he had known. He woke before sunrise, sitting up in his western bed, beaded with sweat, an oppressive sense of doom weighing down on him. Sai's not really dead, he muttered to himself as he stumbled through the dark bedroom toward the toilet. They could revive him tomorrow if they wanted to.
Yeah, maybe, a voice inside his head replied, if they don't kill him all over again in the thawing procedure.
After a quick shower and a decision that he could skip shaving, Dan strapped on his wristwatch and checked the time in Paris, a little after 8 in the evening. He used the phone by the bed to put through a call to Jane. She was not at home, her answering machine said, but all messages would be forwarded to her hourly.
Must be in some double-damned GEC meeting, Dan grumbled to himself. He spoke into the phone.
Jane, it's you-know-who. I'll be there in 12 hours or so, unless I hear from you. Bye.
Then he pulled on a pair of slacks and a loose velour shirt, trying to remember exactly where the kitchen was. He always got a kick out of shocking the servants by getting his own breakfast.
Jane Scanwell was in her office, poring over the reports and memoranda that she never seemed to have the time to read during the nominal working day.
You either have to be an early bird or a night owl, she told herself. The only way to get any real work done is to do it when nobody else is around to bother you.
Once the regular working hours begin, it's nothing but meetings and conferences and phone calls all the blessed day long.
Phone calls. Her computer scrolled all her incoming messages at the top of every hour. And there was a message from Dan, finally. Still being cute, signing it, you know who. It infuriated her. According to the computer, the call had originated in Japan. Lord knows where Dan really is. He's as devious as a used car salesman.
She leaned back in her chair and closed her eyes. Close to midnight.
Where is Dan? What's he doing?
And will he really be at Tetyaroa in 12 hours or less? She found that she almost wished he wouldn't be. She felt disappointed at that, but not surprised.
It was well past midnight when Raffaello Gaetano returned to his apartment on the Boulevard Saint-Germain. Even before he switched on the lights, he sensed that someone was already in the apartment. Then his conscious mind realized that there was a faint trace of a woman's perfume, not the expensive kind that was meant to be seductive. This was more like a simple floral aroma. There was no concierge in the building. That function had been taken over by electronics ages ago. So Gaetano silently flicked his fingertips across the security keypad next to the door, guided only by the crack of light from the hallway coming through the nearly closed front door. The pad's little screen lit up with a numeral 1 and the time, 11:48. Gaetano silently closed the door and smiled to himself. He knew who his visitor was, or at least who it should be. Either way, he tiptoed across the thick carpeting to the window that overlooked the street. Plenty of traffic out there, although the double-paned glass effectively soundproofed the apartment. Slowly, quietly, he closed the blinds, then tapped on the side panel of the window frame in his private code. The panel slid open noiselessly. Gaetano reached in and curled his fingers around the waiting 9mm Beretta. Silently, like a commando or a hired assassin, he made his way to the bedroom. The door was half open. She was already in his bed, probably asleep. Grinning, he put the gun down on the easy chair by the doorway and swiftly stripped down to his briefs. Then, armed and ready, he stepped into the bedroom and switched on the lights. Catherine Williams blinked in the sudden glare and sat up in the bed, her flame-red hair tumbling over her bare shoulders, the sheet slipping down from her breasts.
"Hands up, thief," Gaetano said.
She frowned at him.
"For Lord's sake, Rafe, I'm in no mood for your silly damned games."
He leveled the gun at her.
"I said, hands up."
She sighed and raised her hands over her head. The sheet slipped further down to her hips.
"Caught you trying to burglarize my apartment," he said, grinning. "Now, should I call the police? Or are you willing to make amends?"
"What do you want, a blowjob?"
His grin widened.
"That would be nice. For a start."
An hour later, he was lying on his back in the darkened bedroom, and Kate was saying,
"So I left Alphonsus right after he did and came straight here. But I felt so damned tired in this gravity that I had to go to bed."
"A good place for you to be," Gaetano murmured.
"Good for you."
"You didn't enjoy yourself?" She did not answer.